Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, June 22nd, 2001. In the fireside room this morning is Jan Bowman. Today's session number is BOJ 2001-04, and it's titled Understanding Meditation as a Journey to Our Own Heart. Let's listen in.
My name is Jan Bowman, and the title of this session in our series on meditation as a spiritual practice is on the board here, Understanding Meditation as a Journey to Our Own Heart. And tomorrow we'll be taking up this theme where we left off, meditation as a journey to the heart of God. It's all in the context of journey or pilgrimage, which is often used, isn't it, when we're talking about a spiritual quest. I had to wear this t-shirt today because 2 years ago, Paul Olson, who's one of the teaching staff coordinators this summer, stripped it off his back. You've heard that expression? Stripped it off his back at the bus when he was saying goodbye and handed it to David Wee, who's also here on the teaching staff this summer, and said, give this to Jan. Well, I was just beginning to come out of a long period of illness that had taken me very, very far into what we call the wasteland or the wilderness, the spiritual dry land as well as the physical one. It was all intertwined. And we had talked, Paul and I, he's the track coach at Augustana College in Rock Island, and that's my alma mater. We had talked about the shirt in terms of a spiritual journey. Can you imagine that? Here's his track star, right? Now, at the time, I weighed about 20 pounds less than I do now, maybe 30 pounds less. Yeah, probably. And you see what the message is. One goal. Okay? Or you can turn that around, right? And you can say, the journey is the goal. What does that mean to you? The journey is the goal.
Yes. Living in the present, living while you're doing your journey, rather than living in the future, is it?
Exactly. Living in the moment. Is that easy for you to do? If it is, you may leave right now. No, we're always worried about what we should have done, what we could have done, what we ought to have done. The tyranny of shoulds, right? We talk about those. Or we have memories, both good and bad, right? We're living in the past. Some of those memories involve resentment or grudges. Others involve things that we cherish, that we hold dearly. Loved ones that we would like to bring back and be present with us. The other place that we live is in the future, right? Also, how do we live in the future?
Worrying about what's going to happen. Thinking about what's going to happen.
Yes. The lilies of the field passage from Matthew is probably the one that sends its arrow right here for me, you know. Look at the lilies of the field. Do they worry? Do they toil or spin, you know? From the time I was very little, I think that I was not only a natural worrywart, but I was taught to worry. How can you be in control of your life if you don't worry? So, in a sense, the present is the most difficult of moments to enter into. To be here in this place, or simply to be. In that sense, the journey is a series of moments, but we have markers, don't we? Markers in that journey. Whether we call them goals or we call them something else, they are times that are pivotal or transformative in our lives. And I'm going to take just a few minutes today to talk about some of those moments. And this has to be personal. Has to be individual. We can't talk about them in general terms. So I'm going to ask you to write in response to these questions. Now, there are too many up here. It would take the whole hour. So I want you to choose one or two that strikes you as, you know how some questions don't click and others you say, yes, I could respond to that. And then just make a few jottings. It doesn't have to be complete sentences. If you have paper with you, fine. Otherwise, I have some. Who needs some paper? How about a pencil? Okay, how many need pencils? I had a whole, okay, there are some up here. I hope these all work.
I can ask.
Thank you. I'll take this back. Anybody else over here need a pencil or pen? Now, you know what, Holden, we try to conserve, see if that works on your table. We try to conserve paper, right? We recycle it. And so even the one-sided paper that was up in the bin was gone. But I found this. It's called scratch paper. So you're permitted to scratch now. Choose one or two of these questions. I would suggest, for example, that you group them. That one and two go together quite naturally. Three and four. You might want to put four in front of three. Anybody else need a pen? Do you have any questions about the questions? You know, we could close that one blind, and that would help a great deal.
Still might be good to read.
I will. Number one says, what are the two most pivotal or transformative events or experiences in your spiritual journey? Now, that is the kind of thing that an English teacher does to her students. I apologize. But it forces you, doesn't it, to choose. We know that you've had many. Each one of you has probably had many of these pivotal experiences. Or maybe you can only identify one. Maybe the language is too heavy for you. Maybe pivotal or transformative doesn't fit. But try to identify a couple of experiences that have been significant for you. Number two says, what did you learn from these experiences? How did your spiritual direction change? Number three, is anything prompting you toward new spiritual awareness at this time? Anything in your life that seems to be nudging you, beckoning to you? Any unfinished business, for example? Number four, in what sense do you yearn for healing? Another way to put that would be, what is your deepest desire? What is it that you yearn for? Now, are there any questions about the question? Okay. And we'll take about 5 minutes. Take another half a minute or so to record your thoughts. All right, now I would like for us to gather together in about four groups. That will mean that there would be no more than four or five in a group. If you have written primarily about questions one and two, would you please meet over here by this, close to this part of the room? Here or here. These are questions one and two. If you've written primarily about questions three and four, or three and four, would you meet over here? And one group back by, what, do you want to move, Sonia? Is it
yeah.
Okay, and one group back here, okay? When we get together in groups, then I'll let you know more about what I'd like you to do.
Is this the first question?
First question. Here or there?
Oh, there.
Yeah. Maybe we can do one
group. Oh,
is
that not the same?
Four back here.
That's one left here.
Oh,
I'd like two or three. Here or there.
Do we want to move on from two small to three?
It's all right if you stay together.
Okay.
All right, now first of all, is there a person in each group who would be willing to act as a facilitator? Would you raise your hand if you could do that? Over here? All right. Gary. All right, here? Who could do that, please? Sarah? And here?
Oh, I see that.
All right, facilitators, your job is primarily to make it possible for each one in the group to speak, including yourself. That's really your job. And then also to help the group decide on two insights. Now, those insights could come from a personal experience, which I believe you would have to ask that person to tell, right? Or you could tell it for them. Two insights to report back to the whole group. And you have about 7 or 8 minutes to do this. That's really short. Maybe it'll become 10, but you know, if you say 7 or 8, then... All right. Okay, thank you. Are there any questions about what you're to do?
I'm not sure we can do it in that time frame. That allows people about 1 minute to speak.
Right, well, I just
I'm Daryl. Does someone want to start?
Yeah.
On the question.
I got one.
Zero with one on.
And what mirror?
And my name is no eight.
Somebody else starts for a
reality. Is there really a Gary one or two?
One, three.
Spiritual awareness. Or what is the biggest learning for you? Is that my question? I realized that I didn't
But that I'm missing the bridge. It's not like it's on my mind all the time, but it's just that when we were lost seems even more. So I think some of that is some of the motivating factor. He came to me both and did a lot of reading. He was
what I have found is that I'm coaching, sharing the kind of business, not
establish new goals, and all over, it's sort of like starting a little routine and all that.
I just think the majority of us just don't understand.
And as you look up those things that you know, you start running into this isolation, you start thinking of the problem, your attitude comes in your life. Bond that you don't want to totally be involved, your bond is a good thing.
In the 70s, we were here in, at Golden Village twice.
I don't get too excited
with our children. We have three children.
Because
now we're back first. After all that time, we're celebrating our 40th wedding anniversary. All our children are here and children are here.
I think that.
So we're having a good time. Not what I wanted to share.
Every time when something tells me to
do maybe as a result of our experience in Golden Village and seminars, I had a teacher in the 70s.
We share discussion around
the decision. And I don't know the ability to want that, but it is kind of crazy. You know, the same thing. I heard the amount of the little thing. I start out in the place. How long is that place? The people are really place. And so on. We moved to this little town of 26 people here now. It's still there. We're still there. Another 20 years we'll have
it.
We ended up getting some people lost, I guess, 40 calves of about 200 or whatever, you know, so huge loss.
Anyway.
So they had a little girl together, so there were two girls. About how the wasn't going home. So finally she laughed, and that was really hard on both the girls. So I started raising her daughter, And then she was in and out of her lives. Pretty hurtful to my wife. And so my wife took a leave of absence from university and became a resident female. And then eventually the mom came back and kidnapped one of the girls. Then returned the younger one, the older one, and kept the older one, so I don't want the younger one. And so she couldn't deal with her first one, so she left her with her mom, so special. You know, she was with her mom 6 months.
They'll be in the library. There's a lot of ways to find them. In fact, I was just looking at the book. So you never know what the side, in life. I mean, sometimes I think someone wants to help. You know what you got, and you want to kind of have order and be open.
Now I'm going to invite you to come together again.
Oh, okay.
Or just to pull your chairs around. Questions for yourselves, each other. I think that the journey, the spiritual journey to our own heart, I would have to suggest, is a journey that we share. It's in hearing other stories that we begin to clarify our own story. Would you agree with that? You hear the stories of others, you realize what you have in common with others, how you differ from them, and yet that we are on a journey together. Meditation can be thought of as a solitary activity or a communal activity. I was unprepared for how communal, how thoroughly deep the communion is in meditation, not only with God, but with the others. It's as if we can take each other's burdens, spiritual burdens, and share them in silence, even communicate them in silence, which is the biggest paradox I've ever encountered. Now for a minute, I have asked the two groups that have a smaller number of people if they would come up with a couple of insights from their discussion. So would someone in this group, Sally, are you going to respond?
Or? No. Well, we were, you know, discussing things within ourselves, but coming up with how you define spirituality,
mm-hmm.
and for us as women, how many times our lives are full of what you can do for others, what we need to, could do, ought to do, mm-hmm. you know, and you forget to take the time mm-hmm. To be thinking about who you are as a whole person, body, mind, and spirit,
mm-hmm.
and accepting the fact that you need to be selfish maybe in some ways to become aware of your own needs, your own mm-hmm. center,
mm-hmm.
which we don't tend to do. I mean, people have given us assignments in life. You raise four kids. You do your career and home. You do help. You do helpful things for other people.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of what we were. I don't know. Did that say it?
Mm-hmm. And that word selfish is something that resonates with me, and I have had to turn into a healthy love of self. Because unless I replenished that spiritual center of myself, I didn't have any more to give, you know. Now, I think men and women can identify with that. We're both called to work ourselves to the bone sometimes. This little book that Diane Shiner loaned me, because it's on Gerard Manley Hopkins and Hildegard of Bingen, and I really love both of them, has a paragraph in the introduction to a chapter that I'd like to read to you, because it's about that. Ordinary life is a prudent shoplifter. When we are tending to other things, it depletes our inventory. If we fail to nab the culprit in time, we become the victims of a first-class felony. The crime? We have been robbed of our commitment to follow Christ with all our hearts, minds, and souls. The means by which the criminal deed was done? Tools of the trade include chronic worry, overwork, depression, exhaustion, sickness, failures, and losses of every hue. Now, many of those losses are brought about in all of this, you know, well-intended, good action, right? We're simply being responsible. We're doing our job. Oddly enough, these same tools in the hands of saints achieve the opposite effect. They do not deplete, they build up inner treasure. They do not weaken, they generate strength. They prove Paul's assertion, "For whenever I am weak, then I am strong," from 2 Corinthians. I have a little problem with that second paragraph, because it makes me feel like chief of sinners, since my bank, so to speak, my spiritual bank, got really depleted at one time. So that's a very good insight, I think, to have, to pay attention to our own needs of body, mind, and spirit. And as we've been talking about these last few days, they're thoroughly integrated. Even though the spirit might be there, and I believe it is, it continues on in us, it can suffer greatly. How about your group, Sarah?
Well, I think that in some ways we all were kind of, I don't know, speaking in some of the same thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the words may have been different, but it seemed to me our direction was somewhere pretty compatible with each other. And in that, that we, one way of putting it was that there was a growing sense of the need to kind of explore new avenues.
Mm-hmm.
Is that even though we might know whatever some techniques are,
mm-hmm.
it's time to kind of do some new sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that has to do with trying to figure out maybe what our purpose in life is now. I mean, we've done... And maybe it's time, and it is time for some of us to look at new. Mm-hmm. What's next is the way I kind of like to put it. Mm-hmm. My terminology. Sometimes that scares me no end, what's next. Mm-hmm. And so we also talked about that, of having to kind of want to stay in our ruts or where mm-hmm. we are, and that's not all bad. I mean, right. There's some good things about that. But what does it mean to kind of move on and move ahead and be willing? I think one of the strongest things I was thinking out of our group is the desire to be willing to be open to what's ahead mm-hmm. and what's ahead in terms of our spiritual lives, and be somewhat intentional about that
yes.
in terms of some new direction.
Yes.
But also that the desire is strong to feel that there is a purpose to who we are mm-hmm. and what we're about and why we're here. Mm-hmm. And that whatever meditation or spirit that is fostered will enhance that.
Mm-hmm.
How about that? Does that work?
Yeah. In that sense, you might call meditation a spiritual practice that allows you to be patient for that next step to occur to you, to come to you. You may refer to it as the next call, if you wish, you know. It's hard to trust, isn't it? Meditation has given me the patience to trust. And I'm a very impatient person. Kids, get your jackets, we're going, you know, that kind of thing. So I think that those are wonderful insights about each season of life. And especially, I feel, the season of life that I'm in. Not exactly retired, but unable to do full-time work, so I'm like a retired person, if that makes sense. And where is God calling me now? To what sort of purpose? How do I make meaning of my life now? And a part of that, for me and I think for many of us, is how do we take losses, whether they're financial, you know, personal losses, a family member, a friend, loss of health, any of those things, and turn those into meaning in our lives. How do we turn loss into gain? Now, the other night in my homily, I talked about how I had truly been asked, not just asked, I lost my life, quite literally, in order to find it. And how nobody would wish for that. You know, that's not, that verse in Matthew 10 is not one that we all jump up after reading and saying, well, hey, that's the life for me. I want that one right now, you know. Lose everything to find my life for Jesus' sake. That's not the way the world turns. It's not the way our minds usually work, right? Now that's a good kind of encompassing insight to work with. Thank you. Now, this group was larger, so they didn't have time to talk about the insights that you would glean, but would any one of you like to suggest what came to you in the course of hearing the stories as something you would take away, either from your own story or from someone else's?
We'll have to do our leader.
He had to go to work, I think. He sat in the lawns and gardens.
Well, we had some people, you know, expressing some pain mm-hmm. about things that they've gone through in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And some are still on the journey, I guess, of mm-hmm. trying to resolve those things.
Mm-hmm.
But perhaps the effect of that was that a new sense of what's important in life is talking about. Mm-hmm. As Richard was talking about, you know, us and employees that were dear friends, and now they start thinking about what's really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
What else should I talk about? I guess I could tell our little story. We were here at Holden more than 20 years ago with our children, two children. And now we're back celebrating our wedding anniversary, 40th wedding anniversary, and they're all here with their children.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave us new wedding rings. But anyway, in the meantime, from the time we were here before till now, we have made a downward mobility move, voluntary simplicity, I guess you call it. Mm-hmm. We live now in a town of 26 people, and a very simple life, and we like it.
Mm-hmm.
And we spend a lot of time giving things the way we can, finding some resources for people that are struggling.
Hmm. And you're living in a community where there are many needs.
Well,
I assume.
You know, rural America is struggling.
Right, I know that.
Yeah.
And we had, in 1997, in the spring of 1997, there was the same year that the flood came to Grand Forks, we had a blizzard in western North Dakota and South Dakota that killed a lot of cattle. People were really in hardship. We found some resources to distribute at that time. My wife did more of that than I did. I think in our county, and some beyond our county, about $250,000 was distributed to people's needs.
Mm-hmm.
That's very satisfying to be part of that.
What you bring to mind with that story is not only your conscious choice, which I really admire, to, you could say, to lose possessions in order to find life, to find the simple life, but also how natural disasters affect the course of one's spiritual life. Whether you personally experienced it or you become a part of a community that helps, as in the Grand Forks flood, well, it affected more than Grand Forks.
Yeah, we were the opposite end of the state right there. So ours was blizzard, and they had the accumulation of snow that flooded many, many houses.
Mm-hmm. It's no wonder that the flood is such a powerful metaphor in the Bible. Well, thank you for sharing these stories. You know, I believe that Holden chiefly acts as a place of grace in the sharing of these stories. I'd like to move from here to consider a kind of meditation on letting go. Let's see. This is, I copied this back to back, so you find something on the back. This is on the side, letting go heartbeat by heartbeat. Sometimes in order to, sometimes in order to, move on, as your group was saying, we have to let go first. Because, to continue with another verb, art, or metaphor, anyone else need a copy?
Yes.
Our baggage is too heavy, right? We can't move on until we let go of some of this baggage. And this is a meditation on a petition of the Lord's Prayer. Forgive us our debts, it says, as we forgive our debtors. The author of this book, Prayers of the Cosmos, Neil Douglas quotes, is working with the Lord's Prayer and the Beatitudes. And he's translating them from the Aramaic. But first he gives us the King James Version. We haven't seen that for a while, some of us. The King James Version, that's why it says debts, but forgive us our sins. And I would like to ask for us to read this together, Letting Go Heartbeat by Heartbeat. What you see at the top is his transliteration into phonetic, into our alphabet, the Aramaic, and then you have it written in the original Aramaic, then the King James Version, and then his poetic translation of that. So do you understand where we're reading now? Letting Go Heartbeat by Heartbeat. Let's read that together. Loose the cords of mistakes binding us as we release the strands we hold of others' guilt. Forgive our hidden past, the secret shames, as we consistently forgive what others hide. Lighten our load of secret debts as we relieve others of their need to repay. Erase the inner marks our failures make, just as we scrub our hearts of others' faults. Absorb our frustrated hopes and dreams as we embrace those of others with emptiness. Untangle the knots within so that we can mend our heart's simple ties to others. Compost our inner stolen fruit as we forgive others the spoils of their trespassing. Loose the cords of mistakes binding us as we release the strands that we hold of others' guilt. I thought this was perfect for Holden because it talks about compost. And then you get some textual notes. And the last insight in these notes is that the releasing of, so let's see, well, the word I cannot, just as, again reminds us that releasing must be done consistently and regularly if our knotted relationships are to become whole and stable again. One of the aspects of meditation that has helped me a great deal is the fact that we breathe in and breathe out with regularity. Each time we breathe out, it is like a letting go. Some people have called it a little death. I would rather call it a releasing of all those knots that tangle us up. So I give this to you as a means of inviting that within your own spirits through meditation. On the back you have a meditation on blessed are the, well, the Beatitudes, all of them. And blessed are the poor in spirit, you'll notice, is interpreted in poetic form on the right-hand side of the page. And I'd just like to read two of these. Happy and aligned with the One are those who find their home in the breathing. To them belong the inner kingdom and queendom of heaven. And the final one. Healed are those who devote themselves to the link of spirit. The design of the universe is rendered through their form. We've talked about prayer in these sessions, yesterday particularly. And we drew a wheel on the board and talked about all the spokes of the wheel. You know, intercessory prayer, thanksgiving. In my mind and in the minds of most, meditation is not meant to supplant all those forms of discursive prayer, prayer in which we would use words. It is simply, for me, the hub of the wheel, the still point, the place where we can drink in God's presence and be filled so that we can, again, pray with deep meaning using whatever words we have or whatever nonverbal means of offering all that we are carrying with us on these journeys, offering that up and inviting God's presence into our lives. So meditation is a spiritual practice, and Christian meditation goes back to the 4th century. And I'm amazed that it took me so long to find out about it. It was revived in the 1970s by a Benedictine monk, John Main. Some of his books are up here, and I ordered 2 books for the bookstore by his successor, Lawrence Freeman. A little book, which is only about $5, Christian Meditation, Your Daily Practice, and a book entitled The Selfless Self. I'm going to close with an insight from this book, The Selfless Self. This passage is written about poverty of spirit. I think we have a lot of trouble with poverty of spirit. We don't like thinking of ourselves as poor in any way, right? We are entering the experience in meditation of non-experience, that poverty of spirit where we enjoy everything by possessing nothing. The wonderful discovery to be made by beginning to follow this way of faith is that the experience of non-experience is the most important experience of all. It is like the basic starting program that allows a computer to start functioning. Simplicity is what the pilgrim is looking for. It is the richest and ultimately most fulfilling experience of life. Gradually, as we allow ourselves to be encouraged and taught, and as we become more faithful, we find in this experience of non-experience, where nothing seems to be happening, that in fact something very real is happening. But this simple encounter with reality, which is the motive power of growth, is not in our control. It is gift. It is spirit. As gift, or as the elders call it, grace, it leads to an ever deeper poverty, a freer letting go. That has been my experience in meditation, and it's been a tremendous gift for me. Now, of course, as usual, I thought we would have time to meditate, but it has evaporated. However, I would be willing to stay a while for questions, and tomorrow in my session, there will definitely be room for practicing meditation. Thank you all so much for coming. There are also some brochures up here about the World Community for Christian Meditation, which is an international organization. It's ecumenical. It's based in London, but there are also places in the United States.